We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
We'll restore science to its rightful place and wield technology's wonders.
The gospel is not only the message that the church takes to the world, the gospel is the source of the church's very existence.
People have the attention span of hummingbirds on cocaine. It's got to feel good right now. And to some degree, that's the way we also think about church.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
Well, you know, congregations are kind of like families. It doesn't take a lot for the dysfunction to set in. Not just to set in, but actually to institutionalize itself. But some problems that Christian congregations face aren't institutional. They're not a matter of structure or how a congregation governs itself. Sometimes they're real theological problems in congregations that lead to all sorts of other symptoms, like problems with money, or the buzzword nowadays is lack of leadership, whatever that means. Everyone will admit that congregations, Christian congregations, often need help, but what kind of help do they really need? We're going to be talking about a Lutheran organization called Transforming Congregations Network here for the better part of the first hour of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Martin Noland will be our guest for the first 45 minutes. Our call-in number on this Wednesday afternoon, the 11th of March, 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MY-I-E, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. To round off the first hour, Dr. James Lamb will be our guest from Lutherans for Life. We'll talk about victory and the pro-life movement. Not a lot of victory lately, at least politically, in the pro-life movement. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Serge Trifkovic will be our guest. He's director of the Rockford's Institute Center for International Affairs. He's author of a book, Defeating Jihad. We're going to talk about the vote yesterday by the Somali cabinet to make Islam the basis of the country's legal system and constitution in Somalia. And then a little later in the second hour, we'll spend some time talking with Gretchen Pasentino about Buddhism and the Dalai Lama. 50 years ago yesterday, the Dalai Lama was expelled from Tibet. And China has had its way with Tibet for quite some time. The Dalai Lama, of course, is the leader, if you will, of Tibetan Buddhism. We'll find out who he is, what Buddhism is, and why the problem with China for 50 long years. 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MY-I-E, or talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. He's past president of the Concordia Historical Institute. He joins us to talk about Transforming Congregations Network. Marty, welcome back.
Thanks.
What problem in congregations is the Transforming Congregations Network attempting to address?
They are attempting to address the problem of lack of statistical growth. They're particularly targeted toward plateauing. That means congregations that their statistics have been about the same for a long time, or declining congregations. And most congregations will feel, when they see those statistics, that there is something wrong. That is the basic problem, and what they've interpreted this to be is that a declining or plateauing statistic indicates an inward-focused congregation. So what Transforming Churches Network, they've got two names, by the way. They used the one name in 2008, and now they're using Transforming Churches Network. They are saying that this inward-focused is the problem, and they're attempting to make those congregations outward-focused.
Who are they?
The Transforming Churches Network is a initiative that is started, as far as I can tell, under the LCMS World Mission Department. So their headquarters is the headquarters of the Missouri Synod, and it would be under the supervision, as I understand it, of the Mission Department of the Synod. They are a network of leaders, they would call them, or consultants, that are across the United States, and they started operating in 2008. Some of the key people include the Missouri Synod District President Robert Newton in California District, and Terry Thiemann, who is a mission executive in, I believe, the Mid-South District, or it's down in the southern area anyway. And along with some other people that are not Missouri Synod are some of the people that have put this together. And in April and September of 2008, they held training events for consultants. That would be probably primarily pastors who are kind of the leaders throughout the country in introducing this project and this program to local congregations.
What, in a nutshell, is the prescribed remedy that the Transforming Churches Network has for congregations that are statistically plateaued? What's the remedy?
Well, they have, it's really two parts. There's a consultation that goes on. So these consultants are assigned to a congregation, and they make a visit or several visits and look what's going around and make a specific prescription to that congregation. And I think that's a good thing. Any mission executive in our Missouri Synod or district president could do the same thing. But it's the second part that I have a great trouble with, and that seems to be a prescription they're going to give every congregation, and that is to dump the bylaws and constitution of the congregation and turn our congregations from their democratic polity, in which voters' assemblies are the deciding voice and the ultimate voice of appeal in any congregation, to the point where there's a three-member board of directors that is in control legally of everything. All the decisions rest with those three members, those board of directors, and they are chosen by the pastor. That's a radical change in the way that we do business on the congregational level in the Missouri Synod, and I highly object to it.
I want to come back to that, but I got a kind of more basic question. You said that this is the Transforming Churches Network is being run out of the National Office Synod's Mission Department. What's the Mission Department worrying about the structure of congregations' constitutions for? Why are they worried about polity?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I don't know. I mean, I've been here in St. Louis for a couple of years now. I'm not sure that they have passed this proposal, this program, by the relevant bodies that would be responsible. That would be Commission on Constitutional Matters, Commission on Structure, Commission on Theology and Church Relations, the Council of Presidents. I haven't seen any evidence that this program, which is going into local congregations, has been reviewed by any of those boards that or commissions that normally review these things. And that's a great concern to me, and I hope that our maybe with a little bit of raising the public voice on this, that the responsible parties will review this and say, hey, wait a sec, you can't do this. And it's not just a matter of what Missouri Synod has done in its tradition. It's a matter that you're throwing out all checks and balances, and you need to have those because pastor and everybody else in a congregation is the center. And if you take out the checks and balances, you're just inviting disaster. Well, and I've seen it before.
It's ironic that often this, as you said, throwing out of checks and balances is introduced to a congregation in the name of accountability. That doesn't sound like more accountability. It sounds like an awful lot less accountability.
Yeah, well, what is changed, too, is the nature of the accountability. The pastors are responsible. They have an accountability to the congregation for the performance of their office. You know, if a pastor doesn't do his job and he continues not to do it, he can be removed by the congregation. He's also accountable for his theology and churchly practice to them, and also for those things to the Missouri Synod. What this program does is it kind of pushes all that accountability onto the back burner or off the stove altogether, and the only accountability is for statistical growth. And that isn't even to the congregation. It's to a coach or consultant that's part of this TCN network.
We're talking with Dr. Martin Nolan, past president of the Concordia Historical Institute, about a Lutheran organization, and we'll come back to that, actually. Is it Lutheran in its essence? Is it theologically Lutheran? It might be run by Lutherans, but that doesn't make it Lutheran. I mean, Lutherans can set up a pizza parlor, but it doesn't mean their pizza is Lutheran, right? A Lutheran organization called Transforming Churches Network. Our call-in number on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 11th, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-IE. You can email your questions or comments to us at talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. I mean, if an organization is going to fly under the banner of the Lutheran Reformation, of Lutheran theology, it ought to be able to demonstrate in some way that it is based in, that it grows out of Lutheran theology. We'll talk about that with Dr. Martin Nolan on the other side of this break. After our conversation with Dr. Martin Nolan in about a half hour, we'll round off the first hour of Issues Etc. today, talking with Dr. James Lamb about victory in the pro-life movement, especially in this day when victories, in at least political victories for the pro-life movement, seem to be few and far between and very few prospectively in the future. We'll be right back.
And accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
You'll find a clearinghouse of Reformation resources at newreformationpress.com. T-shirts, music, outlines of important theological books, plus lectures by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. Check it out, newreformationpress.com. If you like Reformation theology, you'll love New Reformation Press. www.newreformationpress.com.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Laverne Meyer, Joy Firestone, Kathleen Schlichting, Elenita Wendt, Paul Lucas, L.P. Curry, Pauline Kate Swyko, Augustine Astacio, Lancelot Brown IV, and Carl Flesch. Thanks for your support. We're talking about a Lutheran organization called Transforming Churches Network. Dr. Martin Nolan is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March It's called the Lutheran Study Bible. I mentioned before the break that if something's going to call itself Lutheran, it ought to be able to demonstrate that it is theologically Lutheran, rooted in sound Reformation Lutheran theology. The Lutheran Study Bible is just that. It is full of notes, the kind of things you would normally find in any study Bible, maps and charts, but also notes from a distinctly Lutheran perspective. You can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and pre-order your copy of the Lutheran Study Bible, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our homepage. You'll find the cover of the Lutheran Study Bible right there on our homepage, issuesztc.org. Marty, at first glance, Transforming Church's network sounds an awful lot, at least it seems to have, especially in terms of its centralization of power and a lack of accountability in the name of accountability, an awful lot to do with the so-called Blue Ribbon plan to restructure the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at the Synod level.
Yeah, that's a curious thing that we're getting these two initiatives at the same time. The difficulty in analyzing both of them is a lot of it's hidden. In the case of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, they've come out with various proposals, and each time the presentation is made, it changes a little bit. So you really can't put down your finger on it and say, well, this is what they're going to say, because we don't know, maybe till the end of this year, what the proposal is going to be. And that's on the national level for the synodical changes. In the case of this Transforming Churches Network, if you go to their websites, you really don't find out that much information unless you become a user. I guess you have to sign on to the program, and then I guess you can get into their websites and find out more about it. And I just happened to, what I did was I Googled, in other words, put the name of this Transforming Churches or Transforming Congregations Network into the search engine of Google, and it came up with a bunch of stuff and just started doing some research on that. Things that weren't officially being published by the Synod, but by people that are actually using it, congregations that have used it, and reporting to their members or through blogs what they're actually doing. And that's when I found out that this is involving the ditching of the traditional democratic polity of the Missouri Synod at the congregational level.
You write that the prescription Transforming Churches Network has for these congregations that participate in it bears a striking resemblance to the covenant that was signed by the early Saxon Lutheran emigrants to the United States when they came over with their then bishop, Martin Stephan. Tell us the story and, if you would, highlight the similarities.
When the Saxons left Germany, they were an assembly of a bunch of different congregations, and St. John Dresden was the main church, and Stephan had been the pastor of that. I don't think that their organization was very clear. Until the end of their journey, they just about had arrived at New Orleans, and Stephan came with a covenant which the pastors encouraged the people to sign, in which the pastor became the sole, more or less, owner of all their property and the manager of it, as well as the spiritual leader of all the pastors and congregations. But, as in any case, it's too much for one man, so he had a couple of laymen who served as his treasurer and board of directors, and a couple of pastors that were kind of his adjunct bishops, or whatever you might want to call them. So not all the decisions were made by the top man, but all the power was vested in him. Now, this Transforming Churches Network is similar in that all the power of a congregation will rest in three people. Where it's similar to Stephan is that those three people are chosen from a slate of five people that are handpicked by the pastor. So the pastor presents to, let's say, an existing, let's say, St. John of Maryville or Belleville, Illinois, decide they want to join this. And they get into the program, and the pastor says, okay, these are your five people you can choose. And then they will select out of those five the three. But they don't realize that they've been prohibited by selecting their own people. And so that it's kind of key who's brought into there, But any pastor that wants this program, that wants to dump Democratic polity, is going to pick men that are maybe behind the scenes. They will do his bidding. And so basically, even though it looks like, oh, there is a board of directors, in fact, they're people that are going to do exactly what he says. And that's where the real problem lies, beside the fact that you've also eliminated the voters' assembly as a court of appeal for any decision of the board of directors in that scheme. They do give the impression that you will be able to get out of this in 3 years. It's kind of like a temporary thing. But if anybody objects, it is very easy, since this three-man board of directors, anybody that objects to this will be considered a dissident and can be excommunicated. There's no protection from excommunicating anybody in this plan. So after 3 years, all the people that disagree would have been gotten rid of, and then you put it up for a vote. Do you like this or not? Well, all the people that disagreed are gone. And so it really, once you've made the decision to get into the plan and have changed your constitution, it's over and done with.
Okay. Don Matzett, who used to host this program years and years ago, said that when he was in the parish, he always tried to make sure that there would some person on the board of elders or the church council who disagreed with him. He wanted to make sure to get that person on that board because he said he had to have somebody there who would be willing to call the pastor out. And yeah, he thought it was good for him as a pastor to have that kind of accountability, even if it meant having to deal with someone who disagreed with him.
Well, and that's one of the strengths of the Missouri Synod. I mean, if you look at our growth over the last 150, 160 years, it's kind of amazing because Lutherans are not native, that we don't fit into the United States cultural scene. We don't fit into the religious scene. And the fact that the Missouri Synod has been able to grow as much as it has is due in part primarily to, I'd say two things. It has a strong, well-defined doctrinal statement, and we haven't budged from that, although people have tried to fight it. And the second thing is that we have had a strong congregational polity, where the laymen are highly involved and they have a voice and vote in every significant decision. And this Transforming Churches network would undermine that second plank and would lead, I believe, you know, easily in a dozen years to congregations going bankrupt, going out of business, and if it's done on a large scale, to significant decline in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
You also point out that similar efforts were made in another denomination, and actually it was successful enough that it led to a split of that denomination.
Well, this was actually in the email that I sent. This was a Missouri Synod congregation that, I'm not going to mention the congregation, but it's a congregation I knew well when I was in Chicago. And about 5 or 6 years ago, after I left there, this congregation, which was not mine, they decided to call a pastor for the purpose of revitalizing their congregation. And they kind of had this same plan. I don't think they had a board of directors system, but they called the pastor and said, we want significant change to reverse our growth. And so then the pastor accepted the call and started doing significant change. And after a couple of months, they said, wait a sec, we don't want that change. He said, if you don't have that change, you're not going to grow. And he kept doing this for a year. And eventually, this congregation, which had been one of the largest congregations, certainly in the 60s, in the Chicago area for the Missouri Synod, dropped down to at least one-tenth of its size. Finally, the district had to step in and get rid of the pastor because he was on a, it was almost a cyclopean view. In other words, he could only see growth, and he would do anything, get rid of anybody in the congregation, say or do anything, in order to achieve what he thought would achieve growth, but in fact, he destroyed that congregation.
When we come back from this break, 10 more minutes with Dr. Martin Nolan, past president of the Concordia Historical Institute. We're talking with him about a Lutheran organization called Transforming Churches Network. When we come back, the wisdom of the Voters Assembly. Is it mandated by God? No. But it was considered to be a very wise move by the founders of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to have an essentially democratic and more or less congregational polity. They did this, I think, not only for reasons of the times, but because these wise men, theologians that they were, realized that the church is full of sinners. And you have to have checks and balances on every decision-making body, whether it be the pastor, a board of elders, a church council, or even a voters' assembly. We'll talk about the wisdom of the voters' assembly on the other side of this break. It's March the 11th, Wednesday afternoon. Dr. Martin Noland is past president of the Concordia Historical Institute. We are coming to you live, and you can join us with questions or comments. 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. In the second hour of the program, Sergio Trifkovic will be our guest. We'll talk with him about Islamic law in Somalia, and Gretchen Passantino will join us to talk about Buddhism and the Dalai Lama.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. Tony Curcio, Mason McLean, Lynn Anderinen, Sharon McLean, Edgar Dreyer, Heather Colmsberg, Peggy Dinkle, Mark Colmsberg, Pastor and Mrs. Gary Fricke, and Paul Dinkle. Thanks for your support.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
When couples have children, they're normally a mixture of each of their parents. But things are unusual in the Spooner family. Dean is black and Allison is white, and they were very surprised when their first children, twin girls, turned out to be one white and the other black, just like their parents. The chances of this happening are only 1.5 million. So you can understand their added surprise when Allison again got pregnant and delivered. Yes, another set of twin girls, one white, the other black. Haley and Laura, the older twins, are thrilled with their new sisters, Leah and Mia. The parents are proud as can be. In this case, diversity begins at home. Just for fun, I'd like to see if Mom and Dad can do this a third time.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
Time for cool change. I know that it's time for a cool change.
It's Wednesday afternoon, March the 11th. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. We're talking about Transforming Churches Network. Dr. Martin Noland, past president of the Concordia Historical Institute, is our guest. Tomorrow on the program, a pastor's roundtable will be discussing the Augsburg Confession. New obedience is the subject for tomorrow's roundtable. Marty, let's talk about why the Voters Assembly and the polity attached to it. Was the polity preferred by the founders of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? They had a lot of things to choose from, and they knew as well as anybody else that the Bible does not prescribe any particular polity.
Well, this is true. But one of the things is that the Missouri Synod founders came out of a situation in which they were all more or less on the same level. They were all on the same playing field. So Stefan and the pastors that came from Germany, they were all just your rank-and-file pastors. None of them were bishops or anything else. And the laymen in those congregations, in their same way, were more or less the same, too. And so they're really, except for Stefan's attempt to grab power, which he was successful for a year or so, there wasn't the, you say, the social or cultural thing that was in Germany, where the clergy were actually of a separate class. And when they came to the United States, it gave them the opportunity to look back and say, well, what actually happened in the Reformation? Did Luther's prescriptions and ideas for congregations actually come to fruition? And they looked at it, and they found out that what had happened was the authority, the ultimate authority for the church had been given to the princes, that is, the princes of the state, like Frederick the Wise or John the Steadfast. And these were called emergency bishops, but in the course of time, they were more or less the ultimate rulers of the church, just like the Queen of England today is the ultimate head of the Anglican Church. And they realized that that really wasn't Luther's plan, and they looked at his writings and said, well, that's not really what he planned. It was more of an egalitarian society of churches. And so when the Saxons came here, that's kind of what they started, and when they actually formed the Missouri Synod, they put that both into their synodical polity, making all pastors equal, and also into their congregational polity by making the voters the ultimate head of the local congregation and not giving the synod any equity or any real authority over that local congregation.
Tim in Ohio emails us. He says, this is a good topic and needs some more time. Transforming congregations is being implemented in my congregation, writes Tim. Prior to the first vote, the pastor preached for weeks that transforming congregations was the answer to our, quote, inward-focused problems. Five prescriptions were passed in a nearly unanimous vote. And now that 8 months have passed, the visioning process has begun, whatever that is, and the new constitution and bylaws have been suggested. There have been voices in the congregation that this complete change-out was not what they thought they were voting for in the voters' meeting. The prescriptions are sold as an all-or-nothing deal. Your thoughts, Marty?
Yeah, that's exactly right, what I've read about it anyway. And I would warn anybody around the Synod that may be approaching this in their congregation that the real key is when the congregation adopts the vision statement. The vision statement commits you as a congregation to the plan, but they don't say in the vision statement that they're going to change your bylaws and constitution. Once the congregation adopts the vision, anybody that says, wait a sec, I wasn't planning for this, they immediately become a dissident. You know, they're blocking the vision, so you've already lost it. You've got to stop it and discuss it at the time of the vision statement proposal and say, what are all the details here? Let's go through this whole thing, and if they won't give you the details, then you say, we're not going to go. We're not going to go there. And this is subterfuge. I mean, this is not any way to treat any Christians, much less people of our own denomination. And that's another reason I think it's just abhorrent. You don't treat congregations like this. You don't treat laymen like this. I would warn a lot of people and get your words out to your relatives and friends that are in Missouri Synod congregations not to get sucked into this thing.
One of the things I find a bit concerning, actually very concerning, and I read here from an actual prescription from a congregation that has adopted the Transforming Congregations Network model. Under vision, it says, in order to gain a clear, unified, compelling, God-given vision, the congregation will, and then it has some action items. It seems a bit presumptuous to claim that the vision developed by a committee or anyone else is God-given. We Lutherans tend to reserve those kinds of adjectives for things like Scripture and the sacraments, not our own ideas about what the congregation ought to do.
That's right. Well, and one thing that initially concerned me, although I haven't found any more information, is that some of the advisors in the original planning of this whole program are not Lutherans. And what I can tell, they're either evangelicals or charismatics. And so from a charismatic or, say, a Pentecostal standpoint, they believe that they get visions and prophecies, and then they can do that thing. But that is contrary to a Lutheran way of understanding how God speaks.
Carrie in Minnesota emails. She says, am I smelling Pastoral Leadership Institute, another kind of a think tank for transforming people at the pastoral level in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, underground stealth sneaking in to change our doctrine, she asks.
I don't know. I don't know if there is a relationship between the pastoral leadership organization. I think that mainly, that organization was mainly for big congregations, and I've never seen any details of what those congregations have done in that network. So I can't speak to that. So all I can say is I don't know. Although I would say that I am somewhat suspicious of the PLI organization, because its board of directors are the same people that are in the political organization called the Jesus First Organization. And that makes me suspicious, even though I have no hard evidence to know what they're up to.
The most efficient form of government, whether it be civil government or church government, is a dictatorship. I mean, it really is. It is an extremely efficient form of government. If you have one person making all the decisions and unaccountable to anyone save himself, the trains run on time. The clocks are always set well, and of course, all decisions get made very, very quickly and don't need to be reviewed. In fact, they can't be reviewed. While the prescriptions of the Transforming Churches Network aren't exactly dictatorship, they seem to be arguing this is more efficient to vest the power in fewer hands. How would you respond?
Now, that's a fair assessment. But the key thing that I see is that the pastor is the one that selects. By only offering five nominations or five nominees, he basically selects who that three-member board will be. And they are the legal authority. So they stand before the state as representing the legal and financial interests. They also, in terms of disciplining members or hiring and firing staff, that all rests with the board of directors and their personal appointees of that pastor. And so you've really thrown out all checks and balances. And so even though it's not strictly speaking a dictatorship, you might say it's a cronyship. I don't know what else to call it.
What connection, if any, asks Karen in Wyoming, does this program have with Ablaze as a movement?
Well, that's an important question. And the Transforming Churches Network is advertised as being part of the Ablaze movement. So it is officially under the LCMS World Mission Department and then subsidiarily under the department that's called the Ablaze Movement. It also uses another program called Groups Ablaze, where they start small groups and try to bring in unchurched people to that. I looked at the Groups Ablaze program, and that looks okay to me. I think that's something that maybe congregations could use, as long as they're not sucked into this Transforming Congregations network through it. So you just have to be careful of what you get into and read the fine print. But this network, with its structural changes, that I definitely believe is something to stay away from and to warn people about.
Okay, with only 30 seconds, Marty, if it's announced at someone's congregation that they're going to be doing the Transforming Churches Network, what should a layperson do? 30 seconds.
He should immediately talk to the church council or the proper venue and to his pastor and say, this is going to change us permanently, probably to our detriment, and you are not treating me as a fellow Christian by doing this. You're treating me as a serf, because that's what you will become. The lay members will become worker bees, and they will no longer be the people that are the fellow Christians working together as a community in the body of Christ.
Dr. Martin Noland is past president of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you.
You know, we have this view It's called the Priesthood of All Believers, or Luther would have called it the Priesthood of All Baptized, includes pastors too, where all are priests before God and all are equal in Christ. And it means that we treat one another, no power grabs, no consolidation of power. We treat one another as the Christians and the fellow baptized that we are. When we come back, we'll talk about the pro-life movement with Dr. James Lamb. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois. Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas. Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon. St. John's Lutheran, Evanston, Indiana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Boise, Idaho. Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa. St. Paul Lutheran, Clarinda, Iowa, Trinity Lutheran, Lebanon, Missouri, Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri, the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Cupertino, California, Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois, and Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org, and click Sponsors. The Issues Etc. 300.
When we say Lutheran, we mean Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Peter Foxwell, Stephen Estes, Doris Shim, Leandro Dutra, Ville Samores, Kurt Rushanovsky, Scott Schaller, Pastor Randall Herr, Ron Fadler, and Timothy Raymond. Thanks for your support.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7. 618-223-8384.